Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Mesa City Council study session for May the 10th. All of our council is present. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to hear a presentation and provide direction on a summary wrap-up of the fiscal year 2018-19 budget. Candace, you're a regular attendee to these meetings. We appreciate you. Thank you. What more do we need to know?
Good morning. So we had a very exciting April where we came to you and we talked about all sorts of amazing things that our departments are doing and activities and programming and the growth in our city and all that and revenues and so forth. And it was pretty exciting. And so now we're ready to kind of wrap that up. We have done all of the scheduled presentations regarding departments and really just kind of want to pull it all together here. As we go into the May, as we're scheduled for May 21st due to the tentative adoption of the budget. So this is just a wrap-up of what we've done. It's not the numbers. We're now rolling all those numbers together, and that will actually be next Thursday that we'll be reviewing those numbers in anticipation of the May 21st agenda. So the fiscal year 18-19 budget is a balanced plan, and we talked about this through, so these are just kind of some highlights. The budget includes investment in our human resources, which are very important, our community assets, facilities, and so forth, as well as making sure that we have sustainability of our quality services so that we can do it not just today, but into the future, which is why we focus on that kind of forecast period that we showed you, that kind of 5 to 7 year forecast. We continue to work on our community, see what the needs are in the community with our communication, looking at data and always using continuous performance analysis tools to make sure that our services are in line with our community needs. Just a real high recap, again, our employees are our greatest asset here in the city because we are a service organization, and without them, we would not be able to provide the quality services that we do today. We have a growing inventory of great places that we've talked about, and one thing I do want to talk about a little bit is kind of our unsung heroes. We talk about that great dinosaur that's on the side of the Natural History Museum. But behind that dinosaur is a building with air conditioning and heating and electrical and computers and everything else that's in every building within the city of Mesa. And so we don't really bring those departments forward to you. They're not as glamorous. We don't have big dinosaurs to talk about. But they keep us running. They keep our museums running, our parks up to date and clean, our public libraries safe and clean and accessible. And so we just want to kind of give them a little kudos for everything they do to make sure the infrastructure is working, the things that people don't usually see. And so those are kind of our facilities and our parks maintenance, our fleet services, our information technology department. And obviously our transportation, energy, and waters, you did hear from, and they work on the infrastructure as well. And so we kind of just want to talk about our unsung heroes a little bit today since they didn't get to present. Another thing that as we go forward and make sure that there are, when we do data-driven decision-making, we talked about that a little bit, especially when we talked about the fire department and the different pilots and the data that we're looking at and the analysis that we're doing. But that's just not in one department. We're doing that in all of the departments across the city. And so I wanted to kind of highlight real quickly how those types of projects end up with the budget ramifications or how those are incorporated into the 18-19 proposed budget. So we do have a vehicle replacement program that we started about a couple years ago based on data, actually looking at 30 years of analysis of all the various vehicles that we run through our fleet. And the 18-19 budget has an increase in maintenance costs by the addition of mechanics. And so in our fleet services area, we've had to add some mechanics and some operational costs. But we have significant savings on the capital side by moving to that type of a program. So that is an impact to the budget, but it's a good impact to the budget. We talked about the fire and medical when they came forward with theirs, and we are running some pilot programs on the flexibility of configuration of response units. We also do staffing model analysis. That doesn't always come to the level of the council because it's kind of a daily thing we do. When do we use temporary services, temporary employees? When do we use overtime? How do we structure the staffing within a department to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the community? And so those happen kind of on an ongoing basis in each one of the departments. And the other thing I want to highlight is our Certificate in Performance Excellence program. And I believe in one of the more recent city manager updates, there was a listing of our most recent recipients of that certificate program. And that really is training in continuous improvement tools. And so how to do performance measures, how to do surveys, how to use data, how to look at your processes and do those types of improvements. And so those go on all the time. We have about 30 Staff members currently enrolled in that particular program, and it's an ongoing program. It's an 18-month program. And it ends with a project in their department using those tools to improve something within their department. And so one of the you receive kind of those recipients, you saw those, but there's also links in that email if you want to go and actually look at their projects and see what they did within the city. So those types of things are going on all the time, and then those would be then reflected in the budgets as we allocate resources to the various innovative ideas that people come up with. We also, in the 18-19 budget, include additional, that community communication that's very important. The use of social media has increased greatly over this last year, as we added in this fiscal year's budget, 17-18, the chief digital officer. So we're continuing to expand that, and that's included in the 18-19 budget to make sure that we're reaching out to the community as much as possible. We upgraded our open data portal. We sent that out, and it's available now to actually tell stories. And the very last item on the agenda this morning is talking about transforming neighborhoods. And so that is actually up and live, and you can click on that and kind of look through the story as we start developing those. We also had a focus on increased financial transparency with our open budget module, which I found very helpful. And what I did here is just give you a couple screenshots. If you wanted a direct link, those links on the top right-hand corner are actually a link into those pages directly, but it's very easy to find from the main page. You just go into the data portal. This is a picture of what the data portal looks like, and you see that City Council strategic priorities there. That's where you'd actually link to that transforming neighborhoods that we're going to talk about at the end of the study session today. At the bottom are all of the data sets. So those are the various data sets that we have there that you can go out and explore. There's also a link to the open budget, or you can go directly to openbudget.mesaaz.gov, and you will see that this year's budget, so this is the 17-18 adopted budget, it will have the adopted budget, the revised budget as things move through the year, as well as the actuals are out there. So as soon as the 18-19 budget is adopted, we would then be working on updating this site as well with the 18-19 budget. The actuals for out here, the actual expenditures and revenues, are updated on the 15th of every month. So it'd be the prior month as it closes, the 15th of the following month, that month will be available. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention. So that pretty much wraps up our fiscal year 18-19 budget process. And like I said, we'll be coming back to you next week with the actual roll-up of the numbers of the actual adoption format.
Thank you, Candace. Council, questions? Yes, Jeremy.
Candace, I just want to say thank you. I know that you've replied to a lot of my late emails, so I know that you've done a tremendous amount of work on the budget, and I appreciate all your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is item 1B, which is to hear a presentation and discuss the economic impact and projections of potential revenues to Mesa as a result of redevelopment supported by the presence of Arizona State University in downtown. Mr. McVeigh, welcome.
Morning, Mayor, Council. So I've got a lot of things to get through, so I'm going to jump right into it. But first, I would like to give you kind of an overview of how we got here. Back in 2016, when we first had the conversation about bringing an ASU presence to downtown, we had hired a consultant, HR&A advisors from New York, to do an economic benefit analysis of the economic impact of ASU on our downtown. The results of that analysis were pretty significant, but it's important to note that that was a different proposal. It was about more than double the size of what we're talking about today, so the impact was greater than what we'd expect. We've continued to look at that analysis and try and give a reasonable assumption as to what the future benefits will be with this smaller scale project. In doing so, it's important to note that analysis looked at a lot of comparable cities. They looked at other cities that had done university expansions and the economic benefits that have come from those. So some peer cities that were looked at, Charlotte, Winston-Salem, Philadelphia.
Excuse me, Jeff, do you have a question, Jeremy?
I don't think any of us can get the presentation to open, or at least from this side.
It's a big file.
Okay.
And we're in the basement.
Okay.
Yes.
So thank you, Jeff.
Amongst the communities that they use as comparable was Phoenix. And so many of the slides that I'm going to be going through are related to Phoenix and the economic activity that has happened then to them. We also looked at the economic benefit analysis that was done in 2004 by Four Phoenix in support of their initial ASU investment. And then we've also looked at recent real estate data, as well as data from Downtown Phoenix Inc. and the census. So the Phoenix economic benefit analysis from 2004 had some assumptions, and I'm showing these to make it clear that we don't believe that this is a one-to-one analysis. It's more to show this is what Phoenix thought was going to happen, and to see if the development patterns actually bear it out. Their assumptions were for 15,000 students, 1.5 million square feet of academic space, 900,000 square feet of retail. So there's some things that were significantly greater than what we're looking at today. However, their analysis showed that there was going to be real benefit economically to the city, $7.3 million annually in ongoing fiscal impact, and then just the construction impact alone of nearly $17 million. This is starting to show the actual development that has occurred. ASU was agreed to in 2005. I think it opened in 2008 in downtown Phoenix. This starts to show some of the development that's happened. The bar chart in the bottom corner shows the amount of economic investment, capital investment in the downtown area prior to ASU in the first bar, the 5 years after, or 3 years after ASU, and then the 5 years after that. Follows the patterns I think that we would all expect, a ramp up during the economic bubble, as well as the downturn of the recession, as well then the ramp up again following as we've come out of the recession. This is going to be a series of slides that shows the sales of property in downtown Phoenix. As it goes through year by year, I think one of the interesting things to look at is there are properties that have been sold three times during this period in the last 5 years. And in each of those cases, the sale price has increased significantly over time. This is just gonna show it in a different way. A nice line chart. This is the five years prior to ASU opening, 2001 to 2005. It was a reasonable positive trend for the sale of properties and the price per square foot. The next slide, though, is the most recent 5 years, 2013 to 2017. The trend for sales of properties and price per square foot is significantly higher than it was before ASU. And then in another way, so I'm gonna show data in multiple ways today. And showing data in another way, this is the sum of all sales. So this is essentially every property that was sold is the total value of that property. This follows, again, the pattern that you would expect. Prior to light rail and ASU, it was very steady, but not very modest growth. During the period after ASU was announced and constructed, we get some spikes. We get the economic downturn in 2008. And then as we're coming out of the recession, we start to see a steady increase, with the last 3 or 4 years being very significant in the amount of property sales and the value of those sales. So this is another series of slides that are showing the actual development year over year, 2005 to 2017. And again, much like that last chart showed, it's pretty steady for a number of years. And then around 2013, after ASU's been in place for about 5 years, stabilized and has met its expectations for student counts, the amount of development really kind of blooms. And you start to see a significant number of apartment and hotel developments in the area. Again, showing similar data in a different way. This is showing the amount of private capital investment in the downtown area, 2005 to 2017. We've included a trend line in there simply because there are some really big outliers that have happened. Cityscape was a huge development and created a really large spike in the 2010 area. And then you see in the last couple of years that the 13 new multifamily developments that have come online since 2013. We reached out to Downtown Phoenix Inc. They're similar to our Downtown Mesa Association. And they keep stats on downtown business activity. According to their analysis, Downtown Phoenix has seen over $5.5 billion in private investment since 2004. which has, and I think importantly for me, the thing that I like to see is that that has resulted in over 2,000 new residents in downtown, and they have more than 3,000 residential units that are in pre-development still. They've had 90 new restaurants and bars and significant growth in their hotel stock, and then also the economic activity that comes from having 12,000 to 15,000 students in your downtown. They do have they are, as a membership organization, able to track revenue of their businesses, and they've had a 74% increase in the business revenue in the downtown since 2008 to 2014. Going back to our own analysis that we had from HRNA, there was assumptions of, this gives you an overview of the assumptions that we had previously, 250,000 square feet of academic space, 74,000 square feet of commercial space. Our current proposal is for something closer to 113,000, 115,000 square feet of academic space and 1,500 square feet of commercial space, which equates to a percent, essentially 40% of the scale of the original proposal. Without going through and doing hiring a consultant to redo this, we went through and essentially just applied a 40% ratio to all the benefits that analysis had provided. This chart is only related to the private investment benefit, job creation, and economic benefit that comes from that. We did not include in this slide the benefits that will come from the 750 students and 40 faculty and staff, the minimum 750 students that ASU will bring to the downtown, and their faculty and staff, which is currently estimated having salaries of between $8 and $10 million per year for the first 3 years. So this doesn't include the direct benefit that comes from having the ASU building here. So it would be easy to estimate that we'll have at least 45 to 50 jobs created every year from private development, that those jobs will result in $2.36 million in labor income, and that those jobs will result in direct economic output of almost $4.5 million and multiplier output of nearly $2.4 million. I'm going out of order on my own presentation just as I was looking at it in like the order I had last night. In addition to the HRNA analysis, we've taken another step and we've taken a look at the development potential and tried to project what that would mean for utility revenues, direct revenues to the city through utilities and sales tax. We looked at two categories of developments, those that we've already seen that we either have agreements for or that we feel will happen in the near future. That includes things like the Grid, Country Club in Maine. And then we also had developments that we have been told or feel will be catalyzed by ASU or accelerated because of ASU. Things like the AutoNation site, University in Mesa Drive. And then we also included the ASU building as it's being designed itself, because that will generate utility revenues as well. And what that analysis has shown is that in a reasonable assumption of the number of units, square footage of commercial, and square footage of residential uses, that we will see approximately $4 million a year in utility revenues, $1.25 million per year in consumer sales tax. We included a line item for permitting fees at $1 million per year. However, by way of reference, I can tell you that a project like the Grid, when they submit for their permits, that one project will likely be in excess of $750,000 in permit fees. So $1 million is a conservative estimate of what we could see in permitting every year. We've also included a line item for secondary property tax. As our assessed value increases in downtown, that will allow us to look at secondary property tax and most likely lower secondary property tax over across the city as property values in downtown raises.
Jeremy. A question on the secondary property tax. I know when ASU moved to Tempe that they purchased the land as a nonprofit and then subleased out all the land on 99-year leases so that all the investors could alleviate paying any property tax. Is there any chance that same exact thing is gonna happen if ASU comes to downtown Mesa and purchases some of these other properties and does that
same tactic in order to avoid paying those secondary property taxes?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, I'm not aware of any plans on ASU's part to purchase land outside of this project. I know that through this project...
Jeff, we have the option for them to purchase city-owned property.
Yes. No, well, with our lease, there is not.
Right, but on the other sites in front of the MAC and other sites around City Hall that are not currently collecting taxes, they have the option to develop those.
Yes, as ASU facilities.
Right.
But I think the key thing is that what we're working with ASU is all academic programming, not commercial ventures. And and Jim can correct me if I'm wrong, as an academic program, that's their core mission, and they wouldn't be subject to property tax anyway.
I realize they're not subject to property tax. My concern is ASU using a vehicle to purchase property to circumvent any of the other places that would normally pay property taxes to not have to pay property tax, much like the State Farm building in Tempe, where that land was purchased by ASU, built by State Farm, collects no property taxes, and then was sold off. That's what I'm wondering.
And thank you, I understand better now. Our IGA with ASU is very clear that the second and third phases that we've included are for expansion or the new or expansion of existing academic programs or new academic programs, not for any commercial ventures such as a State Farm where there would be property tax.
But again, Jeff, our agreement only speaks to the property that the city owns today.
Correct.
And so we don't know of any anticipated plans for ASU to go outside of the property that we currently own. The option for them is to take down property that the city of Mesa currently controls.
Okay, thank you.
But just to be clear, we're talking about 5155.
Anything on the plaza, well.
City center.
City center area possible.
The city center, we're gonna retain ownership of that property.
Well, we'll always retain ownership, but they have the option to develop on that.
Right.
There
won't be a transfer of title of the property.
Correct. They'll be long-term. Just like, it wouldn't be any much different than what's being proposed for the first phase. And so when we talk about the HRA study that was originally done in 2016, while we say, you know, ultimately that is still our vision, right? It's ultimately that we would go to that level of development. And so the HRA study impact, we still would suggest that that's still a real possibility for the city. It's just that the funding in the first phase, we're only committing right now to the first phase, which is the building to our, here on the plaza, on the Civic Center area, building A by the ITD building. But there still is the belief, and in the long term, and that's why we're doing a master plan of the whole area, is ultimately that study the HRNA had with the other academic buildings, I think the other two or three buildings, would still continue to happen at some time in the future. So even that impact study, a $5 billion benefit to the city, we'd still say, based on what HRNA came up, would eventually happen. It would just be later on than what we had originally anticipated.
The HRNA study, the part of it that I read, said something about like 700,000 square feet of commercial property space, unless I was mistaken, in one of the somewhere I read that in one of the studies. Is that not the case? There will be no commercial space. This is purely academic?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, the assumptions of the HRNA study were that there'd be approximately 14,000 square feet of commercial space that would be included as part of ASU facilities. And that was originally when we were looking at this, the building that was going to be in the first phase on the Art Center campus where 51 through 55 is located now. The city had reserved essentially the entire first floor for food and beverage options that were at the control of the city to help benefit the MAC.
Okay, I may be mistaken. I
imagine that 70,000 square feet is likely, they made some projections as to the amount of square footage of each different type of private development that could happen, whether it be retail, retail office, or hotel. So I could imagine that it would be part of the retail assumptions.
Okay.
And so, Mayor, Council, the slide that I have up now are for those developments that we listed, Country Club in Maine, The Grid, First in McDonald, University and Mesa Drive, Brown and Brown, those that we feel confident are going to happen, and those that, that the developers have let us know one way or the other, such as AutoNation, that the ASU proposal is fundamental to their development plans. What we haven't included in this, though, are a number of projects that are currently underway, such as Art Space and the residences on Main that will be brought online this year yet, and we'll start providing us revenues to the utilities that we haven't projected yet. And there's additional projects such as facade improvement and other downtown businesses coming in that we would also recognize as creating additional economic activity that will benefit the city as well. So having said that, based on our analysis, there is a significant revenue, financial benefit, economic benefit to the city of ASU. And we think through the peer examples that we've looked at, that the investment in higher education in downtown will provide an economic benefit to the city long term. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Francisco.
Hey, Jeff, on the activity in downtown Mesa, in downtown Phoenix, is there any information on, I know another institution, the U of A, has increased their activity downtown, closer to 7th Street, also expanded their nursing program, their medical program. So it's not only ASU that we're talking about, other potential partnerships with other institutions sure. that we've talked about here also have been relocating to downtown Phoenix, also investing into the downtown portion that I don't see kind of the information here, right? So...
Mayor, Councilmember Heredia, I brought back this slide to show that we tried to identify all the ASU facilities in downtown, which include the biomedical campus in the U of A. Mm-hmm. And yes, I don't intend to or didn't mean to discount that investment as well. It does play into what has happened in sure. downtown as well. Yes.
And so that to that point, we believe it will continue to support been you, and we've already been approached by MCC about relocating down here. So just the announcement of ASU and the Innovation Studios certainly is getting the attention of others who would want to gather and be part of the downtown area.
Great. I think it is important to learn more about that. There have been phone calls made to Mr. McVeigh since this announcement, people exploring, institutions exploring other options. MCC is one of them, and I'd like to hear more about that, but I think maybe I'll save that question for when we're talking about the agreements later on. Kevin.
Thanks, Mayor. Jeff, on the HR and A, when they did their analysis on downtown Phoenix, they obviously captured the student housing and the number of students that were down there. And when they did the Mesa analysis, were they utilizing a portion of the downtown Phoenix study, or were they strictly looking at just Mesa with no downtown housing for students, no core curriculum for students, that it was only focused on grad students and juniors and seniors that weren't going to be in downtown full time? Did they look at that difference, or was it just they looked at Phoenix and said, okay, here's a scaled down version of what's going on in Phoenix, and this is what we think is going to happen in Mesa.
Mayor, Councilman Thomas, just real quick for you. The studies were done by two different groups. So the first, for the study for Phoenix was done by Elliot Pollack. Our study for Mesa, looking just at Mesa, and really they looked at Phoenix along with about six other cities, was done by HRNA. So it was a different consulting group that did our study.
Okay, so that when they looked at Phoenix, they took into account there wouldn't be student housing, that there wouldn't be core curriculum, that it was only juniors and seniors and grad students, or...
I don't know that we have that detail. I think HRNA looked at six, seven different other cities that had brought higher education into... I don't know they parsed out the programming, but they looked at the impact.
Because my approach is in looking at this is because I did the same thing. I tried to look at various universities and other cities that didn't offer core curriculum, and I couldn't find any. There was every university, whether it's in rural America or what have you, has a component of housing and or core curriculum. All of them had core curriculum. I don't think I saw one university that I looked at, and I spent quite a bit of time thumbing through web pages looking, but every one of the undergraduate degrees had core curriculum attached to it so that the students were staying in one location, doing their entire degree in one location, which is exactly what's happening in Phoenix. So you have the student housing, and then you end up with the services that'll promote the students, living in a downtown full time. We're not going to have that here, so I want to make sure that the numbers that we're actually looking at are accurate data, accurate numbers for not having full-time students in downtown Mesa 24/7.
And Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I can address that to some degree. When we met with HRNA originally back in 2016, we knew what the programming for ASU and what the programming, well, what their proposal for programming was. Well, today it's scaled back from that. It is still the same curriculum. It still was the same a center versus a campus, so it was still going to be higher level undergrads and grads. So at that time, we still this was done without the assumption of student housing or the core curriculum. But having said that, back in 2016, the Network Auto site was under contract with a student housing developer in anticipation of ASU. So there is still still an expectation that there is going to be pressure for student housing in downtown, even with this campus or even with this center.
Jeff, we have representatives from ASU here, and I think later on under a different agenda item, we're going to hear more about the proposed programming for this campus, correct?
Yes.
So I think we will discuss that issue in just a moment. Mr. Luna.
In terms of the university offering, it doesn't preclude ASU from offering gen ed opportunities. I can certainly see, because for example, the Walter Cronkite School, it specializes on mass communications and journalism. I'm sure students take gen ed opportunities either via the web or partnering with some of the colleges that are other colleges in the Phoenix area. So I think this would incentivize working with Maricopa Community College as well as working with Benedictine to try to provide those opportunities.
Yep, and we see those buses going back, shuttling back and forth between campuses all the time.
Well, in between the Polytech and Tempe, and there's a tremendous activity between Phoenix and Tempe, and that's why, maybe to your point a little bit, Councilmember, I think your point is interesting, but I think one of the reasons they like Mesa is because of its proximity to Tempe, right, and be able to go back and forth. So I think their students, regardless of what track they're in, of what degree, they're probably going to be going back and forth to multiple campuses. If they literally have buses going between downtown or from Tempe out to Southeast Mesa today, very actively, and a lot of activity going between Tempe and Phoenix. And that's one of the reasons they've looked at Mesa, is because our proximity with light rail and the ability to go back and forth. But to your point, I think we want to have as much of robust programming so that we can, to your point, we want to be able to have students who are going to stay here and be actively in the downtown area. So I think that's something we continue to push for. And whether it's this phase or the subsequent phases, I think all those things are things we need to keep talking about.
You know, I think I had a similar concern at the beginning of looking into this idea when ASU was suggesting, oh, maybe we'll put a lab downtown. And I remember having a conversation with them then saying, oh, no, we don't want a lab. We want academic space because we want activity. We want people getting off the light rail and coming in and buying sandwiches and stopping in the coffee shops and creating that hustle and bustle. And then I heard the presentation from Brookings Institution where they talk about the model for the innovation district, and what you want is a research institution downtown that is spinning off startups and creating patents and creating economic activity. That's a far more significant economic impact than selling sandwiches to undergrads. So I think you got to keep your eye on the ball here. This is not about making a dollar here and there on somebody in between classes. This is about an economic engine that attracts new businesses, that attracts other businesses to come and move in next to this building, that creates technology that is at a higher level and has a more significant economic impact. But in addition to that, the building next to this building, Jeff, is going to be populated by folks from Mesa Community College. Is that correct?
We're considering that, Mayor.
Okay. Well, I can't make a proposal for Mesa Community College.
We met with Mesa Community College to see whether there is a possibility to partner with them in a permanent home for their Information Technology Institute, which is their partnership with Apple and Microsoft for certificates and developer certificates. They announced that a month or two ago, and that they're going to initially kick it off on their campus downtown on North Centennial.
Okay. Thank you. Additional questions? Jeremy.
How were you able to isolate all the other variables outside of ASU to attribute all this downtown success strictly to ASU?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, I am not at all trying to attribute all this development activity to ASU. There is several other factors. There's light rail. There's these socioeconomic changes of people that are wanting to live in a more urban environment. What I am arguing is that ASU is a big factor in the amount of development that's happened and the type of development that's happened in downtown Phoenix. This is anecdotal, but we have conversations with a lot of people. Mr. Neymark could probably talk to this better than me as he was in the city of Phoenix government during this time. But many people say, even with the introduction of light rail, the redevelopment activity didn't take off until ASU came. 15,000 students makes a difference, and it's almost a snowball effect. Once somebody takes that risk and they find success, then another person's willing to take that risk and find success. It's the same thing that we're facing today as we have developers that are all lining up at the door for us, but nobody wants to take that first step. And the first one that does and shows success, we're going to have that snowball effect here as well.
Sure. I guess the part that I just struggle with is we had the worst economic downturn and recession in 2008, and we're setting the baseline for all of this success from 2008 to 2017 and looking at the numbers where in any municipality, or if you look at any of the biggest cities in America from 2008 to 2017, they've all seen a significant economic growth because of that reason. You're starting with such a low base of the Great Recession that I struggle with looking at any of these numbers and saying, well, you know, this is all because ASU came to downtown Mesa. Phoenix, I'm sorry.
And fair point. And I bring back up this slide. As I was looking at this and preparing last night, something caught my eye. And it's, look at from 2000 to 2005, very, very modest value of sales in downtown Phoenix. Then post-recession, during the recession, 2008 through 2012, well, they had a very small 2010. Every other year is actually still higher than pre-recession or pre-bubble numbers. So to me, that does show somewhat of a resilience to an economic downturn in downtown Phoenix. And part of that could be because of the Phoenix or the ASU campus and light rail and the people's choice to live in that environment.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The problem that I don't that I have with this chart is I don't see the residential median sales house price and how that actually affected, because you could talk all day long how this affects commercial, multifamily, or vacant, you know, whatever that includes. But to me, the things that I care about for my community are the pocketbooks of the individuals who own single family homes, right? And so when I pulled the single family home statistics from 2008 to today's date, surprisingly, the median sales price in Mesa has actually increased more than in Phoenix without ASU being present. We have the Polytechnics campus, so I won't discount that. I believe it's a major economic generator in Southeast Mesa. But the median sales price of a residential family house has gone up more in Mesa than in Phoenix. So I don't dispute the fact that this is making a significant impact in the commercial and multifamily, but at the end of the day, what does that mean to the residents?
And we didn't include it in this presentation, but I do believe that we have the data related to the median sale price of houses, single family homes for the downtown area of Phoenix. We can put that together and we'd be happy to share it with council to show how that, and I apologize, I can't remember. It was a positive trend, but I can't tell you how positive of a trend it was.
That's fair. I can tell you that we did better in Mesa than they did in Phoenix.
In downtown Mesa versus downtown Phoenix?
I can't isolate downtown
citywide
Mesa.
Citywide.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would suggest that
the price per square foot in downtown Phoenix is much higher than it is in downtown Mesa. And comparing across a whole broad city, I think, is difficult because our fall in the recession was much greater than almost any other city in the valley. So I think we have to be careful with that too. But I think if we isolate it to just the downtown areas, I would suggest that the square foot that you can cost to live in downtown Phoenix is significantly higher than it is in downtown Mesa right now.
But that's fair. So let's talk about some other metrics. Let's talk about the unemployment rate. So has the unemployment rate in Phoenix from 2008 to 2017 gone up or down? And I want to talk about the metrics that affect the actual people in the community. So I want to bring it back to that.
So we didn't do this part of the study. This wasn't part. We did what we took the HRNA study and we tried to discount it for this phase. So we didn't get into these kinds of metrics in our analysis.
Okay, so I can tell you Mesa's unemployment rate from 2008 to 2017 dropped from 5.8% to 4.4%. The city of Phoenix unemployment rate has gone up from 3.2% to 5.8%, which actually is the opposite of the trend that we're seeing in the entire country. So again, you know, I appreciate the metrics that you've presented here today, but at the end of the day, I fail to see how these connect to the people that I represent in my community.
Okay. Thank you. I have a couple of questions, Jeff. Back to the HRNH study, I know we said that given the square footage of the proposed project versus the one a few years ago, it was fair to reduce the HRNH numbers to 40% of that figure. 40% of what figure?
I believe it's $5.1 billion economic benefit, total economic benefit, direct and multiplier benefit over the course of 20 years.
Okay, so rather than the HRNH proposal or study said that had we gone forward with the original proposal, the economic impact over 20 years would be over $5 billion.
Yes.
We're saying the bad news is this is only 40% of $5 billion, which would be $2 billion over 20 years. So $1 billion over 10 years, $100 million over a year, if you were just to average it out. I'm sure that there's probably more in the latter years than the first years, but just to take it an annual average. So what the HRNH study is saying is that they're suggesting or they're estimating that the economic impact to the community is going to be $100 million a year from this facility. Is that correct? Okay. And the other slide where you're talking about the economic activity associated with new private development, again, these jobs and these figures do not include ASU. This is the private investment, not the public investment.
Correct, Mayor. The HRNA study originally did, as part of 2016, did provide an economic benefit analysis for ASU from the students and the faculty, and their spending power in downtown. We did not include that in this analysis. We did, however, in the other slide, include some estimation of the consumer sales tax that could be included, come from that.
And I do want to talk to that, but just so that we're clear, so we're not overstating the numbers here, the first slide that you were showing were the annual $9.1 million impact. That does not include the direct impact of the building and the jobs, the ASU building itself.
Correct.
This is the secondary impact of other jobs created as a result of the project.
The impact of private development creating new businesses and jobs associated with those businesses, the economic output of those businesses, and then the multiplier benefits of creation of jobs ends up somewhere creating more jobs downstream, which provides more economic benefit.
So that's a little over $9 million a year.
Correct.
In at least the first 5 years.
Yes.
And presumably after that as well. Okay, and then to the other slide, having to do with direct estimated benefits to the city of Mesa from the ASU development and the selected downtown developments, which out of fairness would be the Brown and Brown property, Site 17.
Yes.
In addition to this building. Why did you choose to include those projects? Do you see a direct impact on those projects in the ASU building?
Mayor, Council, related to the AutoNation site, Sunbelt Holdings owns that site. John Graham is the president of Sunbelt Holdings. He's made it very clear to us that the development of ASU campus in downtown is integral to his development plans. I firmly believe we would be talking about somewhere along the line, had we had a campus already underway right now, we would be talking about what his development proposals are today, maybe even seeing some development agreements versus what we are right now. We're in a holding pattern until to see what happens.
Now, I've also heard from other developers, Mr. Sprague and Mr. Wall, who have large projects in downtown. They have expressed a great deal of enthusiasm for the ASU project as well, indicating that that will increase the likelihood of the success of their projects. Am I overstating that?
No, that's a fair statement.
And then the Site 17 property that the city owns that we want to develop, I think in the next couple of weeks, we're working on a master developer.
Oh, I thought you said develop in the next couple of weeks.
Well, we're soliciting a master developer for that property. Is something that you've been working on, is that right?
Correct, Mayor. We released an RFP for consultant services to prepare conceptual master plans. Once we have the conceptual master plans, we would use those as the basis to go out to the development community and start developing the site. We'll continue to work on that, and we're moving forward with that no matter what. It is my belief, though, that project will accelerate. The development of that 27 acres will be accelerated by the existence of ASU, and likely the economic benefit to the city through the sale of land will be better with an ASU presence in downtown versus not.
So, and that opinion is based on conversations with real estate developers, and you're comfortable that the value of that project, the quality of that project, will be significantly impacted by ASU coming to downtown?
Mayor, I believe we're going to have a significant amount of development interest on Site 7, University okay. Mesa Drive.
So to the slide then that we were just at, the direct impact in terms of utility sales, sales tax from those buildings, the permits issued by that building, the economic impact of the increased property values, the direct impact by the buildings that we've talked about is about $7.5 million a year.
Correct.
Okay. So per the HRNH study, it's about $100 million a year. I don't want to misstate this. Per the indirect economic benefit of other projects, about $9.18 million a year. And then the direct impact from these buildings is about $7.5 million a year. Is that
correct?
And do you feel like these are conservative estimates that are based in sound economic data, or are we on thin ice here?
Mayor, we have been purposely conservative in our estimates. For example, the AutoNation site and University Mesa Drive, we don't know what the plans are today. So we created assumptions of land use types and the intensity of those land use, a low, medium, and a high assumption. These are based off of a medium intensity development assumption. The permitting numbers that are shown here, those are very conservative. It'll only take two projects, Country Club in Maine and the grid coming on this year, and we'll have $1.5 million or greater in permit fees. So I think that we've purposely tried to be conservative in this. And I'd even refer back to the 2016 HRNA analysis where they were trying to be conservative in their analysis as well. And they even state, when you look at the summary, that they believe that some of the private development growth that they anticipate will be higher than what they've included in their actual analysis.
So, Mayor, I just one thought is, I think we're confident. We've tried to be very conservative in this, but really, what it comes down to is when. You know, it's not a challenge when we have to provide these to you quantitatively in a spreadsheet. It looks like everything's going to happen day one. It's not. That year one could be 5 years from now. It could be 4 years from now. It could be whatever. So we're just trying to give a sense of magnitude. You know, it's going to take a while to design, construct, and get a program up and running at ASU. How fast the development happens after that, we don't know for sure. But the experience of what we've seen in Tempe, Phoenix, Dallas, Philadelphia, North Carolina, they all suggest that these numbers and this kind of experience that we've tried to quantitate will happen, and they've happened throughout other parts of the country. So this is just this is an estimate, and it's a plus or minus. Probably the most difficult thing to estimate in this is not so much trying to understand a vacant lot and land use and try to come up with its ultimate development numbers. It's just when will it happen? And so, you know, at some point within the 20-year period, we do believe it will happen.
So fair enough. This is a long-term, permanent play in our downtown. This is not something that you're going to see, be able to measure in the short term.
We call it an investment.
Yeah. Okay, so this might be a question for you, Mr. Brady, but Mr. McVeigh, so what? I think you've done a great job of summarizing what now we know what the plus side of the equation is. You know, the $7.5 million a year in direct, $9.18 million a year in indirect, and $100 million a year per the HRNH study in the larger ripple effect. So what is this going to cost us to get that return?
Yeah. And so, Mayor, that's the work that's ongoing today. As we mentioned to council, after you gave us permission to continue the discussions with ASU, we have, with ASU, are sitting down at the table with a design consulting team. And you're going to hear later today, or this morning, sorry, a presentation that'll include, you can see where we are with the programming side of this. And the idea is to come up with a set cost, a maximum that we'll agree to spend on the academic building. So we have the academic building. We think the city will probably want to invest some of its funds in its own building, the design, the innovation studios, to bring in a Boeing and an ASU innovation and MCC and others. And so we allocated that. We also need to create a strong connection, a civic center connection between the light rail and the building. So we want to make sure I allocate. So we're trying to make all that fit within this budget. So how much will go to the ASU building? Again, we're hoping to have that in the next 2-3 weeks, I think, the end of May, so that when we come to you in June with the agreements, we'll have that number to include in the agreements in June.
Okay, nice way to tease the next meeting in June. So we'll wait to hear that number. Mr. Freeman.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Jeff, for your presentation. I was just curious, did your analysis include the new development proposed between Le Sueur and Mesa Drive along Main Street?
Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, we did not. We were well into this analysis the day that the City Creek Reserve folks came into the city and said, we're ready to move forward. That project is a very significant, you know, well over 200, I think around 240 residential units, commercial retail space on the first floor, and a timeline that's going to happen in the next 2 years. So, no, we did not include it, but that would be a significant development.
So to tie that in with the grid and then CPLC development. And just a couple more comments. You know, last year, and I find this intriguing that three of us traveled to New York City, and I'll say with ASU, to look at these innovation districts and how they impact communities. And I was just impressed with all the students, the way New York University worked. We went to the Brooklyn Navy Yard. We saw the innovation and work there. And how the City of New York took the Navy Yard and then 300-acre development and transformed it into, and it's probably 25-30% developed, and it'll be a huge economic engine to their city, and I appreciated learning all about that. But I believe Mesa always invests in ourselves. We've done that for decades, and I had the opportunity to visit with Mr. Graham last Friday, and I asked him point blank, I mean, does this, if it's ASU, U of A, NAU, or whomever comes downtown, is that important? He says, it's critical to my development. And so I believe him. He knows his business. So I'm putting it out there. I do support ASU. I think it's a huge economic engine for our downtown area. It'll create income stream that we provide all the utilities for these developments. The other thing is, and this is kind of fun, I talked to Chief Rankin. I'll throw him under the bus right here, but you know, I asked him why he lives in downtown Phoenix, and I could have him come up and explain why, but I won't do that to him. But
he has to take off his uniform.
Okay, but for him, it's connectivity, and the services that are there. So, you know, maybe he'll come back to Mesa if some of this is built out, but. But regardless, I know I make, but in all seriousness, this is important for Mesa, and I support our vision, I support our leadership, and thank you very much for all you do.
Thank you. I forgot we have a blue card here, so I am anxious to hear from the individual that asked to speak. But so, Jeff, we may invite you back up after this. Christopher Bone.
Mayor, before I step away, I'd like to give a big thank you to our engineering staff. Tony Heffer, their GIS analyst, was responsible for all those maps. I couldn't ever say that I was capable of putting together those graphics for you today.
Okay. Nice job. Thank you. Mr. Bone, welcome. You have 3 minutes.
Mayor, Council, thank you. Christopher Bound, actually. But 3027 South Pennington. A lot of my questions, actually, Councilman Whitaker went over, but I do have some concerns that we are using a study that's from 2016, and that may not sound like a long time, 2 years, but look at what has happened since then. Economic development that has already taken place since that study, the trend lines that have happened since that study. I think that we need to go back and look at this again. Especially as we're looking at the cost side of things, hopefully that we have new numbers coming in from that. On the revenue side, obviously these numbers are stale. Granted, you have said that they are conservative in nature, but that still doesn't mean that they're not stale and need to be updated. And I think it's important to do that so that we get a really good idea of what this is going to look like going forward. You know, I really support ASU, and whether it's downtown or somewhere else, you heard me on Monday talk about there are different options and areas to build, and I'm not really concerned about the developers. I you know, want the economic development, but we need to be concerned also about the citizens and what this is going to mean for them. So just because a developer is ready to go, that's great. That's awesome. And I support that. And I support ASU. But is this the right place? Is this the right cost? And I think that we need to look at that and kind of temper our, remember that not all that glitters is gold. So and temper our enthusiasm a little bit and make sure that we're looking at the right sites, the right areas, and to develop the center. I really look forward to the cost side analysis of this project, because that's, I think, that's where the proof in the pudding is going to be, is on the cost side. The revenues are one thing, but that's definitely another portion of it. I can see my time is almost up, but I appreciate the council, Mayor, the council's time to speak on this. I really look forward to looking at the cost side, and I want to speak again once we get those numbers. And again, to reiterate, it's really important that we have current numbers that we're talking about. This is a huge project for the city. It's a huge investment. It's a huge commitment of time as well. So we need to make sure that we literally cross all our T's and dot all of our I's with this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Sounds like we'll look forward to hearing from you again.
Yes,
Kevin.
Mayor, I received an email yesterday from a constituent. She asked me if I could read this in to public record on her behalf, because she's in serving jury duty right now. So if I may. Angel Levine, 7245 East Navarro Avenue, Mesa, Arizona, 85209. Dear Councilman Thompson, Mayor, and fellow council members, I would like to start off by apologizing that I'm not able to make it in person to formally address my concerns. Currently, I am potential juror and serving my civic duty. I have been in attendance and spoken to you all about the progress of bringing ASU to our downtown. As I've stated before, I welcome ASU, but not in the way I believe is being forced on my fellow Mesa residents and myself. One of my main concerns was public safety needing to be a higher priority than ASU. I appreciate and thank you all for addressing this critical issue for Mesa. I see you have voted to add the sales tax increase of 0.25% to the November ballot, and that this 0.25% will go specifically 60/40 to our police department and fire department. Thank you. With that said, unfortunately, there is no guarantee that this will pass, and it would look extremely shady and irresponsible if it does not and ASU is funded. Not to mention the back door that seems to be open to dealing with the ASU option. Give it to the residents of this great city straight and fair. I am formally requesting that we give the same consideration to ASU. In 2016, the voters declined the combination of these items, and I'm requesting we put them both on the November ballot as separate measures and propositions. This is the right and responsible way to go about this process. I thank you for your time, consideration, and service. Sincerely, Angel Levine.
Okay, thank you. So, yes, Mr. Luna.
Jeff? Maybe Mr. Niemark. Maybe he can come forward. One of the things that, because I obviously associate with many academic circles, is something that I'm very in favor of. I think what Benedictine has done to the downtown area has been very, very impressive. So I look forward to those opportunities as well. It's really transformed the downtown area. Bringing ASU to downtown campus is very, very positive for us. As you know, I've worked for Mesa Public Schools for many, many years. All my teacher friends, all my administrative friends have acknowledged that ASU in the downtown area is something very, very positive. And so my question is, what kind of feedback have you gotten from individuals that live in the downtown area for the Phoenix Project? And maybe talk about some anecdotal information and how positively it's impact academics as well as residents in the downtown area in Phoenix.
Mayor, Councilman Luna, thanks for the opportunity to be here today. My name's Rick Niemark. I'm with Arizona State University, but as was referenced, I was with the City of Phoenix for 29 years. I was involved with both the ASU and the U of A developments downtown, and was really the lead person on those for a number of years. So our goals when Phoenix went into that were to create a more diverse economy, to create more access to higher educational opportunities for our residents, particularly those who are in the central city, and really to create a more 24/7 creative job focused downtown. I myself moved from the suburbs, Ahwatukee, to downtown Phoenix in 2011. Have personally experienced it. And I spent a lot of time, because we do have properties that Phoenix has granted us the right to develop down there. I spent a lot of time working with the community groups in downtown Phoenix. I was almost every night I'm at those at meetings. I was at one last night and one the night before. And the neighbors who've lived there before and also who are newer have absolutely noticed the difference in downtown Phoenix. I started with the City of Phoenix in 1986, so I've really witnessed a transformation. But the biggest transformations came after two things happened. The light rail opened up and ASU came. And I don't think one of those things on its own would be enough. I think both of those huge investments, and a third one, the city was the convention center expansion from about the 16th largest to the, or 60th largest to about the 16th largest. So that also had a big impact. But as you know, conventions come and go. I think people would absolutely agree that we achieved the goals we set out to achieve. And property values in Phoenix, in those neighborhoods around the area, have grown dramatically. My house is probably worth double what I bought it for in 2011. Now, it was at the bottom of, you know, it was the bottom of the downturn. But the housing prices all around downtown Phoenix and the transformation of the neighborhoods in downtown Phoenix is unbelievable. And then the housing development that's occurred is unbelievable. And I will, just to kind of focus on the question you asked before, Councilman Thompson, about, you know, it not so much ASU housing. Most of that housing is not serving ASU students. It's actually serving lots of other people who just want to be around that environment, like the chief and like me. And I definitely wouldn't have moved downtown if those investments had not been made. So I think you're seeing a huge impact. And there are a lot of developers in downtown Phoenix who would line up and tell you, we couldn't have gotten our financing, or we might not have been able to make this work if, but for the investment that Phoenix made in those two basic pieces of infrastructure, the light rail and the educational infrastructure.
Thank you. Also want to thank my colleague here in his leadership. It is his district, the downtown area, and he's done a tremendous job. So I want to thank you for that.
Kevin.
Rick, when you were with Phoenix, so you probably know better than anybody, was the ASU campus built with public funds, or was that done through a bond?
So it was a mixture, but the city of Phoenix, in the first stage of this, invested $233 million of public dollars into basically property tax-supported bonds that the voters could have, you know, the Citizens Committee and the voters and the council could have spent that money on other kinds of facilities anywhere in the city, but they chose to segment and allocate $233 million for the downtown campus. So some of those buildings are entirely built by the city of Phoenix, just like the one that's proposed here. The Cronkite School is a great example. Brand new building, state of the art, lots of activity, 100% built by the city of Phoenix under the same terms that basically we were talking about, where the university is responsible for the furnishings, for the operations, for the year in and year out expenses of the building and capital replacement.
Jeremy.
Rick, I just want to say thank you to ASU. My sister-in-law is graduating today with her master's degree, and I think that you guys are a very fine establishment. You guys have done a tremendous job for not only Tempe, but the entire state of Arizona and Phoenix. And I don't doubt the great work that you guys are doing in Arizona, and I truly appreciate that from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, and congratulations to your sister.
Yeah, that's great. I have just a couple of responses, I think, mainly to the email that was read a moment ago. I think there's a couple of red herrings that have been floating around related to this issue on social media and otherwise. First, the idea that we're somehow having to choose between doing this project and fully funding public safety. I hope we've addressed that multiple times. I hope we've debunked that now. Our public safety folks are well compensated. We're looking forward to, we are making the case that we need more, to hire more of them, but to insert public safety in this conversation is really apples and oranges. They are not related to one another. Also, the question having to do with whether or not the voters rejected have instructed the city not to engage in this conversation with ASU, again, I think is very inaccurate. I pulled up a moment ago the question one ballot language, and I'm not going to read all of it because it's. I encourage everybody to do that, though. But what it says is, shall the city of Mesa be authorized to increase the city's transaction privilege sales tax applicable to all taxable activities in the city of Mesa from 1.75 to 2.15, of which 0.4% will be used to provide funds solely for the following municipal purposes. And then there's a long list of things, including a list of Mesa Police Department services, Mesa Fire Department services, and then a large paragraph that includes things like a Mesa City Plaza, Benedictine University, Center for Higher Education, and one of the items listed is Arizona State University. This was a question asking our citizens, do you want to raise your property tax or raise your sales tax? The answer was no. And so from the very beginning of this conversation, we have said the ground rules for this conversation are, we're not going to raise our taxes and we're not going to raise utility rates. Now, we're about to have a conversation about utility rates in a few minutes, so that we'll continue that conversation. But there is nothing inconsistent with this conversation and the ideas that we're discussing here and what the voters said. And in fact, I think it would, at this point, if we follow the ground rules of saying we're not going to raise taxes to do this, we're not going to raise utility rates to do this, there is no question that we can present to the voters. We don't do advisory opinions in elections. We don't go to the voters and say, if we don't raise your taxes and we don't raise your utility rates, do we have your permission to engage in a conversation with Arizona State University? That's why they elect a city council, is to make those types of decisions. And Mr. Smith, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that we could even legally present this on the ballot under those circumstances.
Mayor and council, a municipality cannot put an advisory opinion question on the ballot.
Thank you.
So to clarify, but we could actually change the funding source from our utility ratepayers paying for this ASU building and switch it back to a sales tax, which would then require the voters to approve it. Is that correct?
Not unless there's a rating.
How else would you pay for it if you didn't increase the sales tax rate?
You could pay for it with the, just like we're proposing today, proposing that you could pay with the existing rates with both sales tax as well as the enterprise fund. Without having to increase any of those, you can pay it with the existing rates.
But we could easily switch the funding mechanism back to a sales tax so that it's more fairly distributed across the city and put it right back onto the ballot, right?
Well, I think if your question is, could we propose to the voters a tax increase to pay for this and put it on the ballot? Yes, but what I said is, I'm a no to that.
And but that's I think the voters are a no to that.
And we got an answer, and the answer was no. And so now we're not, why would we ask again? Well, the voters have already said, no, I'm not interested in raising my sales tax. So the question is, can we do it without doing that? And that's what we've been talking about for the last hour and 40 minutes.
So we're gonna shift the burden onto our utility ratepayers to pay for this rather than
sales tax? No, we're not, and that's the conversation we're about to have.
So, where does the money come from? It's a $120 million project.
Hold that thought. We're about to talk about utility rates here in just a few moments. So I guess my point is, if we can't go to the voters and say, we don't know what to do, can we have your permission to do what we think is a good idea, given the rate of return versus the rate of investment? That's not what you go to the voters for. You go to the voters when you need to ask for more money. So those are, like I say, those are red herring arguments that I'm sure we'll continue to talk about, but to me they don't hold a lot of validity. Okay, thank you. Gentlemen.
Thank you for your comment, if I can.
Sure.
I just want to say, in regards to the developers who aren't willing to move forward with these projects unless we fund this ASU building, I actually find it appalling that you have organizations now like Amazon or the stadiums, now public universities or the developers who won't actually build in your community unless you're willing to speculate with utility ratepayers' dollars to build out these massive buildings. Like, at what point does this end? Like, what's the next corporation that comes in front of us and says, you know, I'm going to bring so much economic growth to your city, but I'm only going to do it if you speculate with your utility ratepayers' dollars? I just want to say I find that appalling. In regards to the economic projections that have been presented here today, one of my heroes is Warren Buffett, and I just want to leave one quote from Warren Buffett. And I say, this is to quote Warren Buffett, "We think any company that has an economist has one employee too many," and I feel the exact same way. These arguments are speculative at best. And based on that, and based on what the constituent from Kevin's district said, I motion that none of our utility rate schedules, resolutions, and ordinances are to be used to fund ASU until our public safety is adequately funded through the sales tax increase in November.
One second thought.
Okay, well, that item's not on our agenda, so I'm sorry.
It pertains to the ASU building, correct?
I'd invite you to read the agenda. That's not on the
agenda. I'll save it for the special session.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, it's easy to be against something if you refuse to accept an economist's opinion. I don't think that's a responsible way to proceed with making decisions. All right, the next item on our agenda, item 1C, is to hear a presentation and discuss an overview of the Economic Investment Fund. Candace, welcome back.
All right, Mayor and Council, this was a presentation that was originally scheduled a few weeks ago and we didn't have time, so it got postponed until today. There were some questions as we were talking about different investment projects, and you including as one of them, but also other investment projects and how those are actually tracked within the system and how they're tracked through our financial system and how they're funded. So we wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about the Economic Investment Fund that was actually put together. This was actually a request back when the spring training started, when we started talking about spring training and how we were going to build a new Cubs facility, and how what that mechanism was going to be for funding, and how would we make sure that we track that so that we're being very transparent in where the funds are coming from and what the funds are being used for. And so that was really the opportunity we had to create this fund, which is really, I would call it almost like a transparency fund. It's made to make sure that we know where the funding is coming from and what the funding was spent on as we go forward. It also helps us to collect any revenues from those investment projects so we can see them all in one area. At that time, we also had, through our Economic Development Office, a HEAT initiative. HEAT standing for Health, Education, Aerospace, Technology, and Tourism. And so at that time, that was the focus within the city from the council, was that those were the industries that we wanted to focus on here in the city of Mesa to try to start to grow those industries within our community. And so that was incorporated into, again, this economic investment fund, where anything that was spent regarding some of these initiatives was tracked there so we could also see any type of a return. Some of the things that were the Benedictine was one of those projects, as well as the Center for Higher Education. And so expenses related to those were in the economic investment fund, and then also the leases, the rents, any revenues coming back from those are also tracked in the economic investment fund. Here are just some examples of projects that we have done over time. So again, there was a healthcare study. We did some, again, Mesa Center for Higher Education, Benedictine University. The spring training multi-use fields, we were actually just on your agenda recently for an economic development area as well, as that's being developed now. But that was part of one of those investment projects that we used this particular fund for. Able Engineering, AZ Labs, Accelerator, we had the purchase of the Mervyn's building, which has then been almost completely offset at this point by other contracts that we've had with our other leases that we've had. That's offset that as well. And then the various redevelopment zones that the Economic Development Office has come through and talked with you about.
Excuse me, Candace. Kevin.
You know, I'm glad we're actually having this conversation. One of the things I want to highlight is AZ Labs and how what an important asset that is to Mesa. You know, when I was looking at the economic investment forecast, you know, it's showing under technology the AZ Labs, but the operating expenses of about $1.6 million, and I'm not sure if that's the operating expenses associated with AZ Labs or what exactly that operating expense is, because I know that AZ Labs is actually we just signed or approved the contract for, I think, Dane to take over from, I can't remember the name of the company, Aileron or something like that. But anyway, so that contract is, you know, roughly $900,000. And then when you take in the utility costs associated with that, that's further reduced. And then with the tenants that we just brought on with, and also with another one that's looming, pretty close to signing on to taking a skiff out there, we're actually going to be, for the first time since the city took it over and since 2011, we're going to be actually pulling a profit. We only spend, on average, about $200,000 a year for the maintenance. So I know that it's always been programmed for about a $1.1, $1.2 million, but we've only spent roughly $200,000. I think the largest maintenance cost that we've seen to date was the electric service that we did out there. But I just want to make sure that my colleagues are aware of the asset that we have in Mesa, in AZ Labs, and the importance of it, not only generating technology and defense, but it's a kind of a big deal in Congress as well. It's, the Mesa Industry and Defense Council has really brought it to the forefront as well through the Chamber of Commerce. I think Dane has done a tremendous job. Our economic development folks have done a tremendous job of moving AZ Labs to where it's at now. And again, we're actually breaking even right now and on the verge of making a profit for the first time ever at AZ Labs. And to me, it's just a tremendous asset that we need to be aware of.
And Mayor and Councilmember Thompson, I do want to point out, thank you for bringing that up. That is, if you look at, I didn't want to change anything from the first time that this was presented to council since it was already scheduled for you. We have not done those updates to the AZ Labs portion of this. And if you look at that financial schedule, the bulk of the forecasted costs were related to AZ Labs. So we have not made those recent updates to this particular forecast, but we will be looking at doing that. And again, that's exactly right. That one took a little bit longer, right, where we had to do some costs in there, but hopefully now it's going in the right direction.
But let's be clear, it still hasn't recovered the initial cost.
Right.
And it doesn't, that you said utility costs are an expense. So there's the expense of utilities, there's the expense of capital costs, there's the expense of maintenance.
But are we collecting on the sales of the utilities, though? Because I know we're collecting on the sales tax
we haven't been. We haven't been. Right. But my point is...
I know we haven't been on the cooling loop.
Right. So, but my point is we still have to pay utilities. We still have to pay for the security and maintenance. We don't have funds to pay for tenant buildouts. We still haven't recovered our initial capital and costs in that facility. So we're hoping on an annual basis to start breaking even, but we still have not recovered our initial cost in the facility. But again, we don't go into these deals. I think the council has to be very clear. But a lot of these deals, we don't go into thinking we're making a profit. We're not a profit-motivated organization. And sometimes I get those questions about what's our profit margin? We don't calculate profit margin. We look at this and other factors, including job creation, the value of having that asset, maintaining it in the community was significant. We were the only entity that could reserve that and hold that in our community. So, but AZ Labs is on its way. It's improving. But if you go look at the deferred maintenance cost that is ahead of us, and if we were to schedule that out, it's going to be a waste before we get to a point where we can say this is a profitable enterprise. But it certainly is doing better than it has been in the past. So I will give kudos to that. And I know this is very dear to economic development, but at the end of the day, when you do the accounting of it, of the full accounting cost, we're from an investment standpoint, if you were looking at it from an investor standpoint, we're still looking for our return on investment. But we've got jobs out there and opportunities to have some valuable contracts. And I think that's a good thing.
So, Ken, it's just for context, the Economic Investment Fund is the same. If we proceed with the ASU deal, this is the fund that this would be financed through, correct?
Correct. This would be the mechanism that we would show all of the expenses as well as all of the contributions coming in from
the investment. But let's be clear. We created this fund because we hadn't, this wasn't the first time we started doing economic investment programs, right? We've invested millions of dollars at ASU Polytechnic before we had an economic investment fund. We spent millions of dollars on street improvements, water, sewer improvements. We've spent millions of dollars in building out investments to bring Apple to Mesa. And so we didn't have, at that time, back in those days, we didn't have this economic investment fund. It was being done in a variety of different funds and different programs throughout the city. We created this when we had the council was very intent on creating this heat initiative, and they wanted to show us making some concerted efforts to fund projects, whether it was tourism, whatever, and really became a place to be very transparent about how we were doing it. I want to be hesitant. For some of these, this is the funding takes place initially, but some of these are paid for by lease payments. So it's not just because it's in the enterprise fund, it's a place to track it. But some of these actually have dollars they're collecting from revenues and leases. The fact that we have ASU here is just because that's the pattern. That's how we've tracked things in the past. It's been the pattern that councils have agreed to when we did. When we say BenU, frankly, BenU and Mesa Center for Higher Education are almost one and the same today because BenU controls, I think, 70% or more of that facility. So those were dollars that came literally only from the utilities. It was because of a savings and some refinancing that we were able to find some cash. We didn't have to debt finance it and take cash. So instead of returning it back into the utilities, we invested it into the buildings, BenU and Mesa Center for Higher Education. We have not tried to recover the cost of those facilities. It's only the cost of the improvements that we've put in here. So by putting ASU in here, one of the reasons we wanted to show you the presentation that
previously is to say there may be, at the end of the day, ASU will be funded through an excise tax bonds. All right. Those aren't utility bonds. It's an excise tax. That's where it will be. That will be the mechanism by which we will issue the debt, will be excise tax bonds. If we do nothing else, ultimately it would be paid for by sales tax. But what we wanted to do is we put it into the enterprise fund, and today all you see is the expense hitting the enterprise fund. And when we put it into the enterprise fund, at the time we did it, we looked at the forecast for the enterprise fund, determined that no utility rates would be needed, increases would be needed as we looked at the fund at that time, based on the performance of savings and debt, and as well as the increase in utility revenues. So we were able to put it in this economic investment fund, and we set it at $6 million. Everyone keeps saying $6 million is going to ASU. That's not accurate. It's not accurate. We've said that over and over and over again. We are hoping that we look at the possibility of maybe that initial building could be $65 million. I don't need $6 million a year for 20 years to pay for that for $65 million. There's more money in there because we want to look at the innovation studio and we need to look at the infrastructure around it. So this investment enterprise or this economic investment fund is just a place to show so we can very, very transparent. Because otherwise, I could go fund a little more on the general fund. I could go fund a little bit over on the streets fund. I could go fund a little bit over on the utility fund. And it would be in three or four different places. This is a way we can track it, show where it's at, and then the council each year. And I think one of the reasons we want to show you that presentation before is then we can kind of figure out what the split should be. So the funding come, how much should come from sales tax? How much should come from permit revenues? How much should come from utilities? But we can make that every year, annually we make the decision. Because when we sell the bonds, the pledge is going to be to the sales tax, not to the enterprise fund, to the sales tax. We've got it in here. Certainly it is hitting the enterprise fund fully in our forecast, but that doesn't have to be the way it is. We believe it can absorb that cost. It's a $400 million fund, $6 million. When we put it in to the forecast a year ago, or 6 months ago, and we ran it through the system, because of savings and increased revenues, it did not impact the rates that we had forecasted. As a matter of fact, the council is reducing the rates. So I think we just want to be very careful. This investment fund was a policy driven by the council of how we can get these projects done. Sometimes the enterprise fund serves as kind of the initial investor, and then the leases pay it back. Sometimes we do these projects that have very little impact on utilities, but tremendous impact on property tax values and sales tax. But because we don't have a primary property tax, we've always kind of said the enterprise fund plays that role. So there's a lot of different things going on in this fund. And so it's hard to kind of, I guess, my point is, it's very hard to say it's just like this. It's really just a way to be, I think Candace said at the beginning, it's a transparency way for us to show here's the projects, how we fund them is not dictated only by this. We can certainly look at different options.
I have a question on that. Sorry.
Yes.
On the schedules that I'm looking at that were attached to the presentation to the Audit and Finance Committee, there shows a placeholder for the Downtown Economic Development Fund of $6 million a year, and it's offset directly by utility revenues in that line item breakdown that I received, the Excel document. Is that correct?
I just said.
I'm just trying to understand.
Right, and I just said that the answer was when we looked at this fund, when we were asked to find the funding for ASU and the Innovation Studios and everything around it, we looked at the enterprise fund to determine, because the mayor said, I don't want any rate increases related to the increase. And so we looked at the capacity within the enterprise fund at that time to include the $6 million. And as we ran it through, recognizing we had just realized some savings on financing from debt, that we had some capacity there, as well as higher than anticipated growth in the fund, we recognized that we could put in a placeholder of $6 million in the fund without impacting the rates as they were known at that time.
I'm just trying to understand the source of the fund. So the enterprise fund, the $6 million placeholder today, is offset by net sources from the utilities. Is that correct?
As I said, they...
Well, if it's not, then tell me where the $6 million is coming from. Like, I'm
right
trying
now,
to understand.
Yes, I said it was, and I said council has the prerogative every year to make a decision about whether it should fully be funded out of the enterprise fund or should it be funded also in combination with the sales tax or permitting fees. And that's one of the reasons we showed the first presentation, to show you there is an opportunity to reduce that and say, you know, maybe some of this should really be coming from sales tax and permit fees because they're also going to benefit from this project.
But what we're moving forward with today assumes that it's coming
for one year.
For the first year, we're assuming that the utilities, are funding this $6 million placeholder.
We believe that the revenues in the enterprise fund are sufficient to cover the six out of $400 million, that $6 million in this first year will not impact the rates. And yes, that in the first year, that is our recommendation.
So we lowered the rates in this first year, and then as I look at the projection, we have to project this out on a five-year basis. All we did by lowering rates this year was shift the increase of rates on years 2 through 5, which it's still estimated that we're paying $6 million a year from the utility revenues.
If you look at the rates that we had forecasted at the beginning of the year, we haven't changed those.
I'm not. Going up. Fair.
So, correct. No, we didn't increase the rates.
But the rates are projected to increase in years 2 through 5 in order to sustain an 8% reserve fund balance in the enterprise fund.
Correct. Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, the rates that the initial staff recommendation to the Audit, Finance, and Enterprise Committee was the exact same recommendation that was made last year regarding the 18-19 rates and the rates and all of the future
with
years.
With the
downtown $6 million investment.
So there was no impact on the projected rates.
For the next 20 years?
Well, we only do it for five years.
Well, the ASU bond is 20 years, right? So have we forecasted the entire life cycle of the ASU bond?
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, we have the forecast period that goes through 2022-23. We pick that period because that is a period through the economic correction that we are currently forecasting. We do our rates based on that forecast period. We make sure that we are above our reserve balances on financial policies and also make sure we have sustainability at the final year. Those are the assumptions that we do when we do our forecasting. We also are very conservative in our forecasting. So we have put a $6 million placeholder at this point for downtown investment. We have not included any of those numbers that you saw on Jeff McVeigh's slide. So if any of those numbers come in with additional utility revenues, those have not been included in that forecast period. So at this point right now, we are very conservative in the fact that we have included additional expenses in there, but we have not included any additional benefit of downtown investment.
Yeah, I guess the part that I don't understand is that if you're going to pay with ASU using a 20-year bond, I don't understand how you can say that that isn't going to impact utility rates for the next 20 years.
Because we may not pay it all with utility. It's an excise tax bond, and the council can choose, even in the next year or in the next 5 years, matter of fact, this year, it could choose to not pay all of it with enterprise funds. It could choose to say, we want to put some of that with sales tax or permit fees.
But the balance that I'm being presented with is showing that it's all being paid with offset from utilities in the scheduled forecast.
That's that
first year.
Yeah.
No, for the entire forecast.
Okay. And again, that's what I said. That's why we had the presentation before, so that council could look and say, well, maybe our policy should be, not all of it should be absorbed in the enterprise fund. Let's look at the option of including sales tax or permit fees or other fees to pay for it.
But I would say we don't have, we just voted earlier this week to increase the sales tax from 1.75% to 2%. So it's not, I would assume we don't just have leftover money laying around in the general fund to support this. So I guess I'm just trying to understand, if the $6 million isn't coming from the utilities, which all of the presentations that have been given to me show it coming from the utilities and offset by the utilities, then where's the presentation that shows me where the $6 million a year is coming from?
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, the presentations that you're seeing are showing that we are saying that there is capacity within the enterprise fund to not change any of the utility rate assumptions from last year where there was no placeholder for downtown investment. There is capacity within the fund over the next few years through 2022-23 at this point in time to absorb downtown investment money without changing any of the forecasts for rate increases. What the city manager is saying is that right now that is our forecast, that we have the ability to do that. It is council prerogative in future years to give us direction on alternate funding for that. It is staff recommendation that we include it in the enterprise fund because there is capacity without increasing the previously forecasted rate adjustments.
So the excess money that you have in the funds, you could actually lower the utility rates if you didn't add the expenditure of the anticipated $120 million cost of the ASU building?
We could not lower the rates. We would reduce the, we would have to be able to do, reduce the increases in the outer years, not for 18-19 because we've already received council direction to reduce it down to the 2%. And that is already below the, that would be below the staff recommendation if we were to do a smoothed forecast.
Just to keep us moving forward, we're now discussing the utility rate issue, which is the next item on our agenda. So why don't, let's wrap up this presentation just so we can stay in order. Francisco?
My question is on utility rates, but I'll just wait until the utility rates discussion because it's just clarifying on that these are forecasts, right? And it's under the discretion, like you're saying, Candace, that council has the discretion to lower, keep the same, or increase utility rates every year council prior to me getting here actually had an increase what we're proposing this year of a 2-point increase, 2% increase than what was voted on last year, right? So every year we're having the discussion in how we identify these percentages for utility rates increase. So, but I have more questions until we'll get to the utility rates.
Thank you. I have a point to make on that too, but Mr. Thompson.
Chris, when we look at our investment projects, just on the ones that are on the slide, on the previous slide, how many of those have we recovered our original investment on? For example, Able Engineering, have we recovered our original investment on them?
Not yet.
Okay. And what about like Mesa Center for Higher Ed and Bennu?
Not yet.
Any of them?
I think I just heard that the Mervyn's lease is...
Other than Mervyn's.
We don't want to talk about Mervyn's?
That was a pretty contentious study session.
Exactly. So I would actually love to hear about Mervyn's. Has the lease paid off the amount?
What it is we had the... as opportunities arise, we'll not say that the Mervyn's building has paid off for itself. It's that as opportunities arise, we've been able to find other funding sources that we're able to... So the Economic Investment Fund, in essence, fronted the amount of money for the Mervyn's purchase at the time that we had the opportunity to do that. In the meantime, we have had the Zayo lease for some conduits, which again was more of an economic investment type of a tool as well. And so the money from the Zayo lease was then put into the Economic Investment Fund, helping us to then kind of offset that cost of what we had to front for the Mervyn's building. And we are receiving leases on the Mervyn's building as well, as is being occupied right now as part of the Gilbert Light Rail extension. Okay.
Again, I wasn't here on council at that point. So have the leases cumulatively collected over time actually pay off the principal that was put into purchasing the Mervyn's building?
Well, as she just said, there's both a contribution that came from a fiber optic that right. We got. We received $1 million as well as the leases that we're getting from the contractor on light rail. And are we saying that that's come close to the
It's coming very close, right? As we go through the end of the term of the lease, as Gilbert Light Rail starts to kind of finish up and they'll kind of end that lease, we will be very close. So what we did is we knew the Zayo lease was coming. We knew staff side, we knew that that was coming forward, but was not available at the time that the Mervyn's opportunity arose. And so it was more of a timing issue. So we actually had the purchase in 1 year, and then the following year we actually received the lease revenue. So we were able to apply that lease revenue back into this fund. So we have both the expenses and the revenues all coming into the same fund. So at this point, the fund acted as a timing issue of allowing us to take that opportunity for development and pay for it with a lease that we were already working on.
Great. Okay, I'm going to suggest that you... wrap this up, please, and let's move on to the topic.
I don't think we have...
That was it.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, the next item on our agenda is item 1D, hear a presentation and discuss an update on the lease negotiations, city center master plan, and the programming for the Downtown Arizona State University project. Thank you very much. Good to have some folks from ASU with us as well. Jeff, take it away.
Mayor, Council, I found backup for this one. today, we following Council's decision to approve the IGA recently, we had to move very quickly in order to get together, get some of our requirements done that were included in the IGA, primarily the negotiate the lease, complete the final master plan development, and then get the building programming in place so that we can develop the project budget, bring that back to Council. Our goal is to be back to you at the end of this month with another update, and then back in the beginning of June with the actual lease and budget for you to take action on. So today, I'll give you a quick overview of where we are in the lease. Just like we had discussed with the IGA, the primary terms are what we are including in the lease. We are talking about a 99-year lease with $100,000 a year in rent, ASU's commitment to provide all the FF&E, which is right now at a minimum of $10 million, as well as to provide students, minimum of 750 students, 40 faculty and staff, and all O&M costs. So the O&M cost right now is estimated around $1.3 million, and staff salaries are estimated to be around $8 to $10 million per year for at least the first 3 years. There is also included in that lease how we are going to handle commercial subleases. We have about 1,500 square feet of commercial spaces included in the building itself. That we have included the net revenues to the city as another offsetting revenue stream for the city. We will have the obligation to design and deliver the building for ASU. The lease has been drafted. It is in the hands of ASU. They've done some initial review. We are working to get that finalized and back to you on June 4th. The other part of that is the development of the master plan. We used our on-call list. Given the short timeline that we have, we couldn't go through a RFP or RFQ process to go out and find a design consultant to do the master planning and initial building programming and budgeting. We used our on-call list and selected Perlman Architects, and they partnered with Orcutt Winslow and Trueform Landscape Architects, and we've been working with them very closely. I think that Rick, Jake, and I have a meeting in about 15 minutes with our design team to continue that discussion, so maybe we'll make it. And our engineering department has taken the lead. Trevor Collin is our project manager. He's been doing a great job, and we've been working very closely. A very good partnership is already forming between the city and ASU in developing this master plan. I use this slide as kind of a placeholder to show this is the area. The area that is not shaded is the phase one area that we are working on. And currently, this is where we stand on the master plan development for the phase one that includes the development of an approximately 2-acre city center park, as well as the ASU building, which is currently around, I believe, 115,000 square feet in size. And we have another design consultant that's working on a parallel path for the development of the innovation or the programming of the innovation studios that we'll hopefully have an update for you on with our next update on this process. So this shows the phase one master plan. Our consultants are also having to look at the overall master plan because we think long-term that there's gonna be additional development on site, ASU development, as well as the potential for private development. So this is the overall master plan. This is very consistent with the city center master plan through the design competition that we had done so many years ago. So this is just a refinement and continued detailing of our master plan so we know how buildings' footprints can fit in and everything is going to have a nice relationship to each other. This is highlighting, trying to give a better reference of the size and scale of the building in relationship to the site itself. So the area in orange is the building footprint, and the area with the outline shows overhangs of the building. this is giving a sense of the scale of the building in relationship to other buildings on the site. Right now, we are looking at a five-story building. And this is intentionally building blockish because this current effort is not to actually design the building, the final architecture. This is an effort to do building programming so that we can come up with a budget that is sound and reasonable for us to move forward with. Once that budget's set and we have council's approval, then we will hire our final design team to actually complete the building, the final building architecture. I included these two slides, or these two sheets, not to make you squint and see whether you can read them, but more to let you know the level of detail in which that we're having to work. These are two of the three pages of building programming needs that Jake, I'm sorry, I didn't introduce my partners, Jake Binholster and Rick Namark with ASU. Jake is with the Herberger Institute, and he's really kind of leading the program development side of this. These are all relationships to space needs for each of the different programmings. And at this point, that means it's a good time for me to hand off and let Jake talk about how the academic programming and how that is helping to drive the actual design or the building programming.
Thanks, sir. Mayor, Council, thank you for having me here today. Like Jeff said, my name is Jake Pinholster. I'm an Associate Dean for Policy and Initiatives in the Herberger Institute for Design and the Arts and kind of the academic and public programs lead on this project, which we're referring to internally, at least now, as the ASU Creative Futures Laboratory. And I want to express that though that this project will house some curricular programs, both existing and new, that meet ASU needs for service to its students, it's really been designed from scratch from the start, all the way back to our original conversations in 2016 and then up through our November design charrette, which we recruited members of industry and other universities, including some of the ones that the members of the council toured, to help us guide us in the development of a program here that will not only serve curricular needs and be thoroughly filled to the brim with film students until 3 a.m. And gaming students for, you know, days at a time, but also to serve as both a centerpiece and a partner to the Digital Innovation District. The intersection of technologies right now that occupies and overlaps the industries of film and media, gaming, experience design, architecture, 3D prototyping and fabrication, even technology entrepreneurship and development are very similar in terms of the use of 3D modeling, scanning, prototyping, and fabrication, in addition to motion capture, the need for just big, wide, empty boxes that in which people make things, and then flexible studios in which multiple disciplines and people can work together. So the academic programs for this building do include film, and they do include gaming, and they do include design, but they also include a program that we're referring to, as I said, as Creative Futures, which will bring students and faculty from across ASU together to look at new futures and to solve big problems. So we want this to be a place where everything from nonprofits and community groups and the city of Mesa itself to Boeing and Uber and Apple can come and engage the best minds at the most innovative university in the country in looking at what the future of transportation might look like, what the future of the collaborative workspace might look like, what the future of the just the block that it surrounds it might look like. This is in line to some degree with some of the things that are already going on here that the MAC and other entities already produce, like the Main Street Prototyping Festival. We want to like to take that to the next level, be able to engage the members and residents of the both the community and the Digital Innovation District and help plan, make new big ideas, technologies, plan new communities and new futures. And to tie this, what Jeff asked me to do, to actually tie this to the building, you'll see as through the space, it's largely, there's not a lot of space in here that is very, very, very purpose specific. There are a few dedicated film studios and a few dedicated recording and motion capture spaces. This is purely because those spaces need things like acoustic isolation, power supply, and data supply that exceed those in normal spaces. A good portion of the building is flexible space devoted to classroom use. To respond to Councilman Thompson's comments earlier about the comprehensive curriculum. Actually, we expect that students in these programs that are here will spend more hours of their day here than they might in any other space, because these are intensive upper division and graduate programs. You think they'll spend more time in this building and its environs than they might spend if it was a part of a general studies core curriculum. I know my film students right now in the lease space that we currently occupy can spend upwards of 14 to 18 hours a day in that space, and they are likely to live closer to it due to that. But a lot of this is also dedicated to project and venture spaces where we can actually invite potential members of the digital, potential residents in the Digital Innovation District to come into the building to sponsor labs, to be able to actually incubate new ventures, technology companies. We've actually had a lot of interest already from a couple of local VR, virtual reality and technology development firms that have come out of ASU, have gone through some of our venture incubation programs, and now are resident in Tempe and Mesa. And are looking for to expand and to have partnerships to make them able to do that. Thank you.
So, Mayor, what this ends up leading into is that the space programming needs of those high things like a high bay area that directly drives the budget of the building, and that's why we're going through these efforts now, is so that we can come back hopefully in late May with our initial budget. Get your feedback, and then come back in June with the final budget and the lease for your action.
It's also worth, I'm sorry, Mayor, Councilman. It's also worth noting that a lot of the building, particularly the first floor, is designed as a very public and porous space. There's exhibit, lobby display, cafe integrated into the building, and screening theaters that are critical for our film program, but can also, on evenings, weekends, serve as public movie theater screening opportunities, public event spaces, esports arenas, and so on. We've intentionally been very engaged in the process with Jeff, the architects, with Rick, on the planning out the distribution of spaces here, and clearly we have another design schematic phase to go through. But the idea here is that this is a direct resource to this residents of downtown as well.
Mr. Thompson.
Thank you for the presentation. My questions are probably more center-centric. Parking for employees, because we're taking out a lot of the parking. So we're going to shift parking for our employees to, I'm guessing, the parking garages, either at Pepper or further to the east?
Well, Mr. Graham, we've talked to Mr. Graham about using his 1,200-space parking garage, okay, or the surface parking that he has.
So will we have shuttles during the summers and then the
We do now. Inclement? We even do now going okay. to the Pepper Street parking garage, so I can see that could
and
be
And then parking for, or will we have on-street parking for folks that are coming in to do permits or coming in to do...
Yeah, so this doesn't affect really that side of it. This is, okay. Matter of fact, most of the parking you see here... that we're taking, you see a lot of city vehicles, fleet vehicles. So there are some employees there, but we think there's plenty of other opportunities, but a little bit farther away.
Okay.
And we also have the parking garage behind the Mac okay. as an opportunity also.
And then how many of these, with these college programs, how many of them will be offered like online versus in person? Is the 750 students that you're projecting, are all of those in person or a portion of those online where they could, you know, sit in Tempe and do an online education?
None of the 750 we're using as part of those metrics are intended to be people who are present only in virtual space. Okay. They are people actively using these studios and these laboratories to make things, to be present physically in the building.
Awesome.
Usually for very intensive periods of time.
And I know that you guys are working with Boeing and on some different educational things and educational attainment and so forth. I met with Congresswoman McSally, in fact, with our Mesa Industry and Defense Council probably about a month ago, and we were talking about ASU downtown and some of the different universities, whether it's MCC or BNU. And her concern was more focused on how do we get people that are unemployed employed. And, you know, with the Mesa Industry and Defense Council sitting there, you know, we were throwing out ideas. And I know the governor of Nevada does a really good job of putting, or has done a very good job of putting together the academia with the business community and identifying those needs. And whether it's through actual degreed programs or through certifications that employers, you know, so they're filling that void that employers need. And so... I would hope that, you know, as we progress with the discussion of the programs, that we also look at how do we take those folks in our community that are unemployed and get them the skill sets that will benefit them as well as our industries, whether it's Orbital ATK, whether it's MD Helicopters, Boeing. There's a vast amount of organizations and businesses throughout our community that could use specific, and maybe some of them are not so specific, type skill sets. And so is there, I would encourage us as a council, if we're going to bring this to Mesa, that we don't look at it just as the programming of what ASU is bringing, but look at the programming of what our business community needs. Because at the end of the day, that's really who we serve, is the citizens of our community, and we want to make sure that they can afford to live and aren't just living to work.
Mr. Luna.
Thank you so much. I've had the opportunities to speak with Boeing. They're in my district. We talked about them, the opportunity of developing some training modules and videos. My background's in television. I worked in television almost 4 years, so I appreciate. So I'm curious to know the type of equipment are you going to have there. Are you going to have ARRIs or RED cameras? Are you going to be editing on Avid or on Final Cut Pro? So, and believe me, they're going to be there all day because I've edited. And when you're editing a production, you're going to be there for a long time until you get your job done. So,
Our problem will. Thank you, Mayor, Councilmember Luna. Our problem won't be whether they're there enough. It'll be whether we can kick them out in order to clean the building.
Exactly.
In response to the question about equipment, one thing I would caution is that we're talking about a project that's not going to open for 3 years in the equipment landscape, and that end of the technology can change significantly. But I will tell you right now, our film program is based on technologies like Arri Alexa and the Avid Composer. We're an Avid certified trainer and so on. We hope that this facility will actually be able to recruit some of those companies that manufacture that equipment as one of the premier sites in the U.S. For this type of entertainment and immersive experience technology development to actually be a site where we develop those technologies. We actually already have a couple of smaller companies that we're working with at the moment, mostly founded by alums, and then also potentially some which are still restricted by NDAs that have been spurred partially by this project, the possibility for partnerships with other entertainment technology companies that might be able to make this place a real research and development arm of that entire industry.
Real quick, so I just want to reiterate my colleague's piece on how this brings additional partnerships and conversations, right? And I think when we're making these decisions, we look at it holistically and comprehensively, right? We can't look at it as a silo-only building and what it costs or what where these revenues are coming from. It entails a whole list of other things that are both quantifiable and sometimes not quantifiable as far as when we look at making these decisions. So adding these types of opportunities also need to be in play as our discussions unfold, because these are big steps in making as far as when I have conversations with the residents of District 3 and taking Mesa to the next level, right? This is only one piece in downtown of a comprehensive strategy that we have and have conversations with residents and business owners and nonprofits and others on how do we take Mesa to the next level. So we can't look at this in isolated terms and how one thing is affected by making these types of decisions. Like my colleagues reiterated, this is opening up other opportunities that sometimes we can't quantify a direct ROI back to the city, but putting values in place, how do you value opportunities that Mesa residents have to go to an institution where they can learn about future technologies, current and future residents of this great city. So I just want to say that because that is apparent, at least for me, that this is just much more comprehensive than just trying to cherry pick of revenues or ROIs or those kinds of things. It just encompasses a lot more to these types of decisions. And I'm sure we'll have many more of these types of decisions as we come, because we're a growing city. We're We're one of the fastest cities in the county, and a county that is the fastest growing in the country. We will have other opportunities to invest back in ourselves to ensure that we get return, yes, but also set a values-based opportunities for our Mesa residents moving forward. So that, I just want to add that comment. So,
thank you. I know you mentioned this a couple of times, so I don't need to beat a dead horse, but you mentioned that some of your recent alums in virtual reality, artificial intelligence, augmented reality, 3D animation, that they have started companies, that mm-hmm. they are that there's some business creation that is a result of this program, and I think this program doesn't quite exist yet, right? I mean, what's happened right. is really just kind of prologue to what you intend to happen. Correct. Can you talk for just a little bit about the potential for startups, the potential for businesses being attracted to downtown Mesa to be next to this building and your professors and your students?
Sure, Mayor, thank you. I can talk very specifically. We've had a number of alumni of the Herberger Institute who have gone on and actually in many cases double majors with engineering or in some of our programs like the Art School of Arts, Media, and Engineering, which is a joint effort, the Fulton Schools of Engineering and the Herberger Institute, who've gone on to start local businesses. The one I can talk about very specifically, and he would love that I'm doing it because he's a Mesa resident, is a company called Baltu Studios, which is founded by a gentleman named Peter Costa. He currently is he lives right here. Currently the Baltu is housed in Tempe. He wants to move to Mesa. He sees this as an opportunity.
I can provide an update, Jake. He actually moved to Mesa about 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah. There you go. I didn't realize he had already moved. There you go. He moves fast. So Peter and Baltu are specialized in virtual reality and immersive sound installations. They do work in creating experiences and technologies that distribute on the web and distribute through proprietary technologies. And he's just the first of many that I think will be drawn to this. We have, I think, really good relationships with Heatsink Labs here in Mesa. We have excellent relationships with a number of we're helping to develop some maker spaces in downtown Phoenix right now that will also start to generate technology ventures. With the participation of our entrepreneurship and innovation programs in the innovation studios under leadership of Jimmy Choi, there's a lot of existing infrastructure to help nurture ventures that come from both the university and the community. And those will mostly be focused on technology and entertainment and the intersection thereof. I think the other piece that was really in play here is the need we're seeing across the board in industry these days for concepts like vertically integrated marketing and brand identity development, which rely on the ability to design for a single person or a firm of people to design everything from the corporate lobby and the media installations that go in it to the website, to the mobile app, to the latest print collateral, to the nature of the product itself. So I think the resources in this building are ideally designed to offer that. And I think we will hopefully see in the building, in the venture incubation and project spaces that we've built into the program, is companies that want to are either young ventures that will be resident in the building fully, or that are larger companies that are willing to take a speculative risk in developing blue sky technologies or experimenting with the way they do vertically integrated marketing or brand identity development by working in this environment. And we hope that also will help us bring, you know, we're in the edge of seeing ourselves as a civilization move into what we're thinking of as the age of story or the age of experience, right? We've gone through the information age, and now it's about how much can we share. And we're to the point where we're developing universes that live online and in the movies that we actually spend as much time participating in as we do in the actual world we occupy, for good or for ill, depending on your opinions on social cohesion. And the thing I really like about this building more than anything else is that everything that's in it will be living in that age already. It's living in that next set of skills in order to tell the next type of story, to build that next universe, to translate the digital to the physical and back again. That's really the philosophical intent here, is to be on the edge of that and being able to help responsibly move it into the future.
And Mayor, let me just add one thing, which is that everything that Jake said is our current thinking right now with just a little bit of dialogue, mostly within the Herberger Institute and some businesses locally. Once June moves along and we actually hire, you all hire the designer, we're going to go through an intensive effort to completely design these programs with the engagement of, you know, School of Sustainability, Engineering School, Education School, et cetera. So we can, and this is going to continue to morph as we look at the building and fill it out. And I see this happening now because I'm working on several projects at ASU where the initial vision for the building only gets more interesting and more innovative as time goes on because people start to think about other ways they can use this space that are valuable. Sort of goes to what Councilman Thompson was talking about too, which is responding to the needs that are out there. But it's also sort of responding to the changes in the technology and the changes in what people are looking to learn and engage with and start businesses from.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor this any longer, but I attended a U.S. Conference of Mayors event at South by Southwest about a month or so ago. Mm-hmm. Every seminar, every presentation there, I had to quickly Google VR, AI, AR, 3D. I mean, that's what everyone is talking about. That is what all of the new startups, that is what all of the buzz in the modern economy is about, and that's what this program is. How many universities have a program like this at this point?
To the scale that we're talking about here, I don't know comprehensively, but I would say somewhere in the order of 3 to 4. We're looking at, I think some of the council members visited the Media Arts and Gaming Network at New York University, the Magnet. We know Carnegie Mellon has the Entertainment Technology Center. The MIT Media Lab deserves mention. And there's USC, if you count several different units together that to some degree work together and maybe not, but their School of Film and Media and or Cinema and Media, and then their Motion Art, Graphic Arts, I can't remember the name of the actual school, but there's not very many, and the ones that are there are all world-leading institutions. And it's worth stressing that we toured USC as part of the planning for this facility, and I know that I didn't get to go, but the NYU tour has also informed it. This building will put those programs on par with any of those aspirational peer institutions for us. This building is built anything like it's been preliminarily designed, they will be, will put us right there at the top in terms of facilities and resources.
Okay. And just 2 weeks ago, Mayor, there was an excellent 60 Minutes segment on the MIT program. If you can find that, you ought to take a look at it because it's really impressive in terms of the kinds of challenges they're rising to and the problems they're trying to solve in the world.
Thank you. Again, I think we're running short on time, so I don't, Council, any additional questions? Or Jeff, any additional presentation?
Mayor, I don't think I should try and follow that.
No.
Okay. Jake did a wonderful job.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate the update.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is item 1E. It's to hear a presentation and provide direction on the release of a request for proposal for the redevelopment of the Serine House for a farm-to-work restaurant and urban agricultural space and requests for interest in operating a downtown farmer's market.
So, Mayor,
do you want to continue some of these items?
Yeah. Let me just offer it.
Yeah.
We could, the next two items, certainly we could reschedule, yeah, if that's for the preference of the council, and then to just go finish off this agenda, and that way you'll have time to get to your special council meeting if that's your preference.
Okay.
What we'll do is we'll include both of these present. I mean, you have them, but we'll make them available to you. And then really, 1E was just going out and doing an RFP. But we can, if council wants us to actually give the presentation before we do that, or we could bring it back when we have the RFP, or we could just reschedule, whatever your preference is.
My question would be, is does anybody have any issues with item 1E? Do we need their presentation on it, or are we okay moving forward with staff's proposal?
It's just it's an RFP. But we've got this staff.
Because quite honestly, I don't have any issues. I think it's a good reuse of the Serine House.
We'll reschedule. We'll go ahead. If it council's okay, we'll go ahead and put out the RFP, but we'll come back and do a presentation if that's okay.
Yeah, I think the answer is yes and yes.
Okay. So we'll reschedule 1F. Also mayor?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then it looks like you need to do another, the minutes, and then we'll...
Okay, right, so we're down, to, thank you very much. So we're going to continue items 1E and 1F, and we're going to now skip to item 2, which is to acknowledge receipt of board minutes. Is there a motion? Thank you, Mr. Luna and Mr. Freeman.
I could talk farm to fork for the next 2 hours.
Let's get into your wheelhouse here.
Okay, we're looking forward to coming back for that one. All right, we have a motion and a second to acknowledge receipt of minutes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The next is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council, anything you'd like to share with us? Thank you, Mr. Brady. What's our next meeting?
So we will have a study session for the 17th. It'll be brief because there are some of you that will not be here, but we'll just be reviewing the agenda for the coming Monday. So that's we'll all limit it just to the review of the agenda. And just real quickly, reminder that our visitors, our humanoid visitors that are downtown, Sunday, May 13th is their last day.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Anything else, Council? If not, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.